What does the Pope do and why does it matter? I wish there was a book that would explain that. What does he do and why does it matter? Something maybe titled What the Pope Does and Why It Matters. The new book from Steve Ray and R. Dennis Walters is called The Papacy, What the Pope Does and Why It Matters. It's available now from Ignatius Press. It's getting rave reviews from all over, including a bunch of people in this building. Jimmy Akin and Carl Keating and Trent Horn, I see on the back of the book, all blurbing it, and Al Cresta, all very fired up about this new book. Steve Ray, you probably know Steve Ray from whether it's from one of his video productions, like his In the Footsteps series of DVDs, The Footsteps of God, The Story of Salvation from Abraham to Augustine, or from one of his many other books, other than this brand new one, Crossing the Tiber, Upon This Rock, St. John's Gospel, The Faith for Beginners, Understanding the Creeds. But today we talk about the papacy, and we try to get that job description down. Steve Ray, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Si. It's amazing you're talking about me. I never dreamed I'd ever write a book, and now I've got five of them, and it's amazing what the Lord did. He took a guy who never went to college and was a janitor by trade, and I can't believe what he's done. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's I'm hoping I'll read one of these days, but you've written five of them. So you didn't start out a Catholic, Steve. I don't know if you remember this part of your own story, but you did not start out a Catholic. As a matter of fact, I remember some anti-Catholic stuff in your background. Did you have to wrestle with this idea of the Pope and with authority and who has authority before becoming a Catholic?
Oh, yes. I was raised, I remember crawling around on the living room floor in my house when I was a little boy, and my dad had a book called Papal Worship. You know, he taught us that the Pope was the Antichrist. It was the worst counterfeit of real Christianity. And, yeah, I grew up that way. I was born and raised a Baptist, and my dad and mom were new converts, and they took it all hook, line, and sinker against the Catholic Church. I remember even teaching classes on how to convert Catholics to a bunch of Protestant friends.
And so what I don't know, what did you make of the Pope then, and how did what had to change in you regarding your understanding of the Pope and the papacy?
Well, I couldn't understand why would Catholics who live in America, the land of the home and the brave and the free and democracy, why would they let some old man in Rome tell them what to do, even in their bedrooms? I mean, well, come on, this is America. We live in a free society. You don't have to. We have the Bible. We can just learn that. We don't need some old guy in Rome, even another country, telling us how to live our lives. Why would you do that? But, you know, as I was going through my evangelical life, I was around 38, 39 years old, I started to question what the problems within Protestantism. My conversion never started with seeing anything good about the Pope or wanting to be like Catholics. All the Catholics I knew were good examples of reasons why not to be a Catholic.
Uh-huh.
I started our journey by realizing there were big problems in the Protestant church, in our tradition, and I almost became an agnostic at one point because I was so discouraged. And one of the reasons is, how many churches did Jesus start? He said, I will build my church. If a brother sins against you, take it to two or three, don't listen to them, then take it to the church. Well, I said, well, what do you mean? Why doesn't it say the churches? There's churches everywhere on Main Street. Methodist, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Assemblies of God, all. And we as Americans pick our churches like we pick our restaurants. What do I feel like today? And I realized something's not right with that. That's not the way Jesus would have wanted it. And so I started to dig into the early Christians, and I found out they accepted the primacy of Rome, that Peter was the rock and he had the keys. And I started that's why I wrote another book on the papacy called Upon This Rock, which I wrote 15 years ago. This new one is kind of a more simple one to help people understand the papacy. But I had to wrestle with that, and I realized that Jesus left a shepherd because their sheep are pretty dumb, and they need a good, smart shepherd to lead a bunch of dumb sheep. And that's kind of what it was. We needed a leader. Every football team needs a captain. Every police force needs a chief. Every country needs a king or a president. It's the way human beings are, and Jesus made a church that fits us, and he put it in charge, the chair of Peter.
And so what is this thing, the chair of Peter? What's you mentioned that, but I imagine there would be people who are, you know, Protestant, or, and I'm sure many Catholics. So what are you talking about, the chair of Peter? How did that get to be a thing? Is that biblical?
Well, when Moses came down from Mount Sinai, let's go all the way back to the beginning. He had three things. He had first the law, word of God written. He had the tradition, a lot that was not written but was practiced within the Jewish nation. So he had the word of God written, the tradition that was not written, and he had the chair of Moses. It says that Moses took his seat and judged the people. One of the most well-respected Protestant commentaries is called Kyle and Dalich. They're the authors, and they make the statement that God gave Moses the infallible gift of interpretation of the law. Very interesting. Moses took a seat and, according to them, had the infallible gift of interpretation of God's law. Well, Jesus recognizes this because in Matthew 23:2, he said the scribes and Pharisees sit in the chair of Moses. It had become an institution. That's why when Jews teach, they sit, because it's to be the seated is the position of authority like Moses had. Jesus said they sit, and the scribes and Pharisees sit in the chair of Moses, therefore do whatever they tell you. Don't do what they do because they're hypocrites.
Right.
But there was a chair of authority. Jesus then takes it away from them, and he gives it to Peter. We know right from the beginning, from the first centuries, that it was recognized that Peter now sat on the chair of Peter. And it was the new Israel. The new Israel has the same structure of government that the old Israel did. You have the written word of God, you have the sacred tradition, and you have no longer the chair of Moses, it's now the chair of Peter. And that's the new Israel, and that's what the church is. And when I started to see that side, that's when it really rattled in my cage, and I ended up becoming a Catholic.
The Lord finds a way, huh?
Yep.
Okay, so the brand new book is The Papacy, and are you of the mind? Do you have a sense that maybe a lot of this is lost, that the papacy has become an institution that people kind of just, you know, the Pope is on the world stage, and people, but they don't really know what his job is?
Yep, I think so. And I think sometimes the Pope is on the world stage too much.
Oh.
In the early 2000 years, the Pope wasn't out on airplanes talking and doing all. It was a much more sedate office, I think. Even I was driving the other day down this main street of Nazareth. It's called Pope 6th Street. And why is that? Because they loved Pope Paul VI. Why? Because he's the first pope to visit the Holy Land in 2,000 years since Peter. He's the first one in 2,000 years. Because it was much, they didn't have the travel. They didn't have the communication like we have today. And sometimes I don't think it's a good thing. I think it should be a little quieter, maybe. That you don't want to have everybody's thought out there on Twitter or something. I don't think it's a good thing. And it has become an institution, but at the same time, it's a necessary institution.
Right.
And it's going to grow with the organization. When it was just 12 guys and Peter there, that's one thing. But as it grows to countries and nations, and the office obviously is going to grow also to be able to handle all of that. So the development of the papacy is something that we talk about in the book. And it's a necessary development.
Yeah, I'm so interested to hear what you said about that, the worldliness of the papacy, because I share that concern very much. And it's not really something that people talk about that much, but we're still, as much as people will say, well, you know, television's been around for 60, 70 years and radio, but in the life of the church, it's only a moment now that we've had these mass communication things. And I really do think we're still figuring it out.
I agree with you. Up for 2,000 years, there was none of that. Maybe you'd get a church document or an encyclical from the Pope that would come out, but the Pope stayed in the Vatican most of the time. You didn't see him. And all of a sudden, John Paul II came along. Well, Paul VI did too, but John Paul II, he was just a natural on the world stage, and he was very careful and measured what he did and what he said. And Pope Benedict, I think, was rather shy of that. He would have rather not been out in the public eye. He would have rather stayed in his apartment and played the piano and write theology books. I don't think he was comfortable out with everybody. It's not what he wanted to do. And I think with Pope Francis, he's very comfortable being out in the public, and I think sometimes too much so.
888-318-7884 is our number. We're talking with Steve Ray, author of a whole bunch of books and articles and DVDs and television stuff and radio stuff. But the new book, is called The Papacy, and it is out now from Ignatius Press. If you have questions about the role of the Pope, the subtitle is What the Pope Does and Why It Matters. 888-318-7884 is the number. Before I send you off to the break, Catholic Answers Magazine is a great way to take up reading about your faith on a daily basis. Every issue is chock full of great articles to build up your faith during Lent and all year long. Sign up now at CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. It's the perfect gift for someone in the family, someone you want to share the faith with, or maybe that person is yourself. CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support on the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
We need Catholic radio because we need the voice of the church in the public forum. We live in a time that the secular voice dominates so thoroughly that we need to get that Catholic perspective out. Just as Fulton Sheen used radio and TV in the last century, we need to continue to use. This means to announce the Catholic faith in the public forum.
Bishop Robert Barron thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
The Papacy, What the Pope Does and Why It Matters is the new book from Steve Ray and his co-author R. Dennis Walters. It's available from Ignatius Press. We're taking your questions on the papacy and just what it is about and what it does. If you'd like to call, 888-318-7884 is the number. You don't have to be Catholic to call. Anybody's welcome to call. You got a question about the papacy? Steve Ray is your man. 888-318-7884. Bow, on Facebook Live, you are up next. Your question for Steve.
Okay. I've been studying with the Eastern Orthodox about the papacy.
Okay.
And the Orthodox seem to claim that every bishop is the successor of Peter, and that, and not just the Bishop of Rome, and that Catholic path called Peter syndrome.
I understand the question.
Okay, good, very good.
I understand it. Thank you, Bao. Well, let me start with this. In the Old Testament, every king that was a ruler of Israel had a royal steward. And that royal steward carried the keys of the kingdom. Those keys were not duplicated. Everybody didn't have the keys. Only one man, who was the royal steward, second in line to the king, carried the keys delegated to him. When Jesus came along and talked to Peter, Jesus is what? He is the king of Israel. He is going now setting up his kingdom. He's going to leave and prepare a place for us, John chapter 14. And in the meantime, he is setting up his kingdom here on earth, and he's now appointing his royal steward, just like the kings in the Old Testament did. He doesn't give the keys to everyone. This is where the Orthodox are wrong. I wrote another book on the papacy. I would highly recommend that you read it, called Upon This Rock. I have many Orthodox Christians that have converted to the Catholic Church because of that book. Be very careful to be when they start saying that everybody is a successor of Peter, everybody has the keys or whatever they say. Because Jesus is appointing a royal steward to run his kingdom, and that's one man, not 12, and he gives him the keys of the kingdom. Now, in Matthew 18, he's talking to all of the apostles, the 12 of them, and he gives all of them the authority to bind and loose, similar to what Peter has, but only Peter has the keys. When Peter dies, just like in the Old Testament, when the royal steward dies, there would be a successor who would pick up those keys and continue that office. Not everybody picked up the keys, but one man who was the royal successor, he would carry the keys. The same with the apostles. Peter was given the keys of the kingdom, a special office, a special job of the royal steward. All of the others also had the authority to bind and loose, but not the exclusive authority of the keys. That's the difference. The Orthodox want to obfuscate that. They want to confuse that, because if they do, then they can get away with rejecting the Pope in Rome today. In order to reject the Pope in Rome today, they have to confuse what Jesus meant when he gave the keys to Peter. And I hope that helps understand.
Wow. Thank you very, very much for your question. 888-318-7884, the number, 888-318-7884. Let's go to Herman in Houston, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Herman, you are up next. Your question about the papacy for Steve Ray.
Hi, Cy. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Good evening to you guys.
Hi, Herman.
Yes, hi. My question is with regards to this. I have a family member, and then she posted this video. It directs right away to the YouTube. It's Pope Francis saying something with regards to the mark of the beast and changing the Sabbath day and something like that. So,
oh, I know they're Seventh-day Adventists. They're Seventh-day Adventists. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, he just changed the Sabbath day. On the beast, it says Pope says that we change the Sabbath day or something like that.
Yep. Okay. I'll tell you what, let me go with that, because I think I know exactly where you're coming from. The Seventh-day Adventists are Christians with some funny ideas, and one of them was that you're supposed to still worship on the Sabbath because that was an eternal law. You always had to worship on Saturday. And when the Christianity came along, they're saying that the popes changed the day of worship from Saturday till the day of Sunday, and that is the mark of the beast. Anyone who worships on Sunday is following the mark of the beast, or the devil, so to speak, and the Pope is the main one. So that's probably what they're referring to.
All right, Herman, I guess we'll leave it there. Thank you very, very much for that call. 888.
By the way, just as long as we got it, that's not the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast is something quite different, which we don't have time to get into now. When the church changed the day to Sunday, it was the eighth day. For Christians in the early church, the eighth day was the first day of the new week when Jesus rose from the dead. They said it's the eighth day of the week, actually. So the number eight was very important to them. It represented the resurrection. And right from the Bible, you say that they gathered together on the first day of the week. Paul says, when you gather together on the first day of the week to worship, take up a collection. So right from the very beginning, the Lord's Day was this eighth day. It was the day that Christians worship because it was the day that Jesus rose from the dead. And it is not the sign of the beast.
Thanks very much for the call. Steve, when you're creating a book like this, The Papacy, I imagine that certainly one of the things that makes people suspicious of the institution is that it was occupied by men who were apparently not worthy of it at all, and treated it.
None of them are worthy of it.
Yeah, okay, so.
Every single one is unworthy of it.
Yeah.
Just like I'm unworthy to be a Christian. It's all by the grace of God and by a special calling of God that any of us can be even remotely worthy, and that's only by the grace of God.
So, if you say that there's a job description for the Pope, then so what is the job description?
I wrote it with my good friend Dennis Walters, and I just want to make sure everybody knows I didn't write this myself. Dennis Walters and I did it together. He's a great deacon and a friend of mine that helped me become Catholic. And when I say that it's a job description, this book that we wrote is showing what the Pope does, what the Scripture and from tradition and history, what is the job of the Pope? For example, if you want to be vice president of marketing at a company, you're going to walk in and say, I'd like to have the job. They're going to say to you, well, here is our job description. It's three pages. It tells you what you have to do, what we expect of you, what time you have to show up for work, what the background is you have to have, and so on. This is our job description. And a year from now, we're going to reevaluate you here at this company, and we're going to find out how good you're doing. And this will be the gauge that we use to decide how good you're doing your job. My book attempts, with Dennis Walters and I, attempt to put down the job description of what the Pope is, including how he's elected, where it came from originally, what his job is, what he should do, shouldn't do, when he's infallible, when he's not infallible. And we try to put that in simple terms so that people could read it and understand what the Pope is and is supposed to do. And it's not about Pope Francis, not about Pope Benedict, not about Peter. It's about any pope that fills this office, so that you can look at a pope and decide how well they're doing based on what the church has given us as their job description.
Ah, so I can, yeah, so if I have a standard, then I can know who's doing a good job. Is there any pope?
Exactly.
Like, I'm not going to let you do Pope John Paul II on this, but do you look down through history? Are there any popes where you go, what a marvelous pope that was? Somebody.
Well. Yeah, I think so. Pope Leo and the popes that stood up against the Vandals that came into Rome and were going to sack Rome,
yeah.
And the popes that went through World War II and how they conducted themselves. I know Pope Pius XII gets a bad rap, but he was quite heroic actually in how he handled it. I think there were many good popes that are just unbelievably. Peter, for example, he denied Jesus, but from that point on, he was a marvelous pope over 25 years and was willing to die as a martyr. The first 30 popes died as martyrs. When they took the chair of St. Peter, they had a bullseye on their chest.
Yeah.
They knew it. They knew they were going to die, and yet they were willing to lay down their life to lead the church. There are some rogues, too. There were some really bad popes, because when Jesus said appoints this office, there's no guarantee there's going to be good guys.
Yeah.
And there's some that were really bad guys. We've had good popes and we've had bad popes, but the popes have never taught contrary to the doctrines of the faith, and they have never changed the doctrines of the faith. There will always be a Trinity. No pope will ever say there's not a Trinity or say, you know what, we're going to add a fourth person to that Trinity.
Right.
Yeah, that just can't happen. The popes are there to define and protect the faith, not to change it. Sometimes we have popes that come pretty close to the line and get scary about it, but they haven't done it. And so that's kind of how, yes, there are some great popes, and I think I love John Paul II. I came into the church under his papacy. I loved Pope Francis. I loved his theology. I love reading what he wrote, and it's so clear and precise, and he doesn't try to change anything. He is trying to establish, to help people understand exactly what the church has consistently taught through the centuries without changing it. So there's been marvelous popes, but there's been a few bad ones, too.
Yeah, indeed. Fair enough. Tom in Yuma, Arizona is next. Tom, your question about the papacy for the author of the book, The Papacy, Steve Ray.
Yeah, good afternoon. I just had a question. Something that you said earlier, too, just made the question even more logical. You said that in order for somebody to be the pope, the previous pope must die, and that then the papacy is passed on to the next elected pope, correct?
I didn't say that. I said that when one pope is gone, another one is there. Let me use the royal steward example in Israel. In Isaiah 22, there was a royal steward named Shebna, and he was a bad guy, and Isaiah said, you are no longer going to be the royal steward. The keys are going to be passed on to Eliakim. So the change of authority within the royal steward happened when Shebna was still alive. That's just the Old Testament example. And I'm not saying that a pope has to die before another one can do it. In this case, it was very unusual. First time in, I don't remember how many, maybe even a millennium, that Pope Benedict decided to resign and to step down, and it caused confusion for a lot of people, even to this day, but that happened. So I'm not one to say that Pope Francis isn't a pope because of that. I think that Pope Benedict made that decision, and we have to live with it.
Does that address your concern, Tom?
Well, it has been my thought that Francis was a false pope from the beginning, because the other Pope Benedict was still, in fact, alive. There can only be one pope,
right? And
to
Pope
me,
Francis,
that is the rule.
We could establish something quickly. Tom is absolutely correct. There can only be one pope.
Yes.
Okay.
That is true. But when Pope Francis resigned and he said, "I'm no longer the pope," then we didn't have a pope. And so we elected a new one. But there are a lot of conspiracy theories about the election, a lot of conspiracy, and I'm not one who dabbles in conspiracy theories, because you never can know for sure. And if something comes out in light and it's proven as a fact, then we have some information. But I'm not one who dabbles in conspiracy theories. I just know that Pope Francis resigned and said, I am no longer the Pope.
You
and
mean
so we
Benedict.
Elected a new one, and I've accepted that fact, and so has the church, basically.
So I have to say, many novel things, or not novel, but things that hadn't happened for hundreds and hundreds of years have happened in our life. For example, a pope that wasn't Italian, that had gone on for, 500 or 600 years before we had the Polish popes.
And there was another time in history where a pope resigned and another pope took his place.
So we'll leave it there, Tom. Thanks very, very much for that. We're talking with Steve Ray, just back from Israel. I feel like Steve Ray is either just back from Israel or in Israel. Those are the two ways you get to talk to Steve. We'll talk a little bit about that. We haven't mentioned your pilgrimages when we come back. What we're talking about is brand new book, The Papacy. What's the job of the Pope?
This is Pat Buchanan. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Did you know that there's a place you can turn first that features the newest, most exciting Catholic resources, as well as a huge selection by some of the best Catholic authors and speakers on the planet? It's our online store at shop.catholic.com. All of our offerings are time-tested and apologist-vetted and trustworthy and faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. And, of course, the lights are always on for your shopping convenience. It's one-stop shopping made affordable and easy. Shop.catholic.com.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture's moral center continues to fly apart, and with every form of deviance publicly aired and celebrated, we have no choice but to equip our kids to understand about such issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. Silence can no longer be an option. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Let's talk about it on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Steve Ray is our guest, and along with R. Dennis Walters, he has a brand new book from Ignatius Press called The Papacy: What the Pope Does and Why It Matters. And we talked a little bit before about it's a strange time we live in. I mean, we've seen so many. We saw a great council, one of the great councils in the history of the church. We saw that a non-Italian pope for the first time, a non-European pope. I mean, I don't mean the first time ever, but for the first time in the modern era, a non-European pope. For the first time since, I think, the ancient church. I'm not exactly sure how far. The first pope from the Americas. I mean, and then as we spoke about, we've seen a communications revolution, which leaves some question as to what is the role of the pope in this mass media age. Well, the basic role, I think the point you're making, is it hasn't changed at all. It's a role of the public governance and unity in the church.
Yes, exactly. You know, I realized that when I was becoming a Catholic, because I almost became Orthodox at one point. We started visiting Greek and Russian Orthodox churches and so on. But I realized there is no such thing as an Orthodox church. There are Orthodox churches. and they are based on the nationality or the country. So you got Romanian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, and they don't get along with each other. You can just see right now in the latest history with Ukraine and Russia, Ukrainian Orthodox Church has now been declared to be independent of Russia, and it's causing big problems. So I realize there had to be one. Every football team has a captain, not six captains.
Mm-hmm.
And a country has a president or a secretary of state, whatever. You know, every police force has a leader. Everybody, that's how humanity works. And the church was the same. Jesus gave the keys to Peter. And Peter was to be exclusive. What do keys represent, by the way? Can I just go out in the parking lot and get your car, Cy, and drive over to your house and move into your house? No.
No, you
Why? Because you have the keys. What do the keys represent? Your exclusive dominion to your house and your car. They represent your ownership, your control of it. But if you say to me, Steve, I'm going on vacation, somebody needs to feed the dog, here's the keys for my car and here's the keys for my house. Now can I go get in your car and drive to your house? Yes, because you've delegated the keys to me. And when you come home, I have to give you the keys back. Jesus is appointing Peter to be the royal steward of the kingdom. He's going away, John 14. He's going away to prepare a place for us. And if he goes away, he'll come again. When he comes back, there's this painting in the Vatican and in the Sistine Chapel of the Final Judgment. Peter's handing the keys back to Jesus. Michelangelo understood what this was about. Jesus has come back from vacation, and I've got to give your keys to your car and your house back because you own them. Jesus has delegated the keys to Peter as the prime minister of his kingdom in his absence. And when Peter dies or when Peter resigns, then the keys go to the next. Peter, Linus, Cletus, Clement, all the way down to Pope John Paul II, Francis, and Benedict and Francis. 266. We can track it all the way back. No other church can do that.
Well, then what about does the Pope then have a role and a responsibility toward non-Catholic Christians?
Yes, of course, and in my book we have a good section on that, not only about non-Catholic Christians, but non-Christian religions like Judaism and Buddhism and Islam. And I have a very tough section in there about Islam, and I say in there that the church is not doing us any favors right now by trying to negotiate and present Islam as being a religion of peace. I have a very strong section in there about what the Pope's responsibility is regarding these other religions, but also what the Pope's job is in regarding Christian religions, denominations, Orthodox, you know, Baptists, Lutherans, and all the others. When Peter was on the Sea of Galilee and it said that he threw the net and he brought the fish up to Jesus, 153 fish, it says that the net was not torn. And that's the word schism, schizo.
Oh.
There was no tear in the net. That net represents the church. 153 fish represent all that Jerome said during the time of Christ there was 153 different nations, languages, and tongues, which represents 153 fish. They're fishers of men. They caught somebody from every tribe, language, and tongue. The net represents the church. Peter drags it up on the shore of eternity and gives that net to Jesus, and that's what the popes have this responsibility. Their responsibility at the end of time is to bring the net, the church, up and hand it to Jesus as the responsibility that they've had, and it shouldn't have a tear in it. It shouldn't be torn with fish flopping out. And I also say that if you're in that net, don't try to get out. The place to be is in that net.
888-318-7884 is our number. 888-318-7884. Steve Ray is our guest. And before I go back to calls, I you've piqued my curiosity. Oh, what is the Pope's role in relationship to Islam? You kind of hinted at it, but
well, I think that the responsibility is to be honest about what Islam is.
I see.
Muhammad let us know what Islam is, but today we have this idea that it's a religion of peace and that Islam is not against Christianity. It's just trying to mind its own business. I think that the Pope and the Church ought to be telling us and reminding us that Islam is as much a political ideology as it is a religion, and that its intent is to control the world under Allah, under a theocracy. They will never accept a kingdom. They will never accept a democracy. Only will they accept a theocracy ruled by Sharia law and run as a theocracy through their imams and their priests. That's what they're going to try to do. when we say that you just if you have only a policy of negotiating and not about being honest about what you're really negotiating with and being realistic that Islam does not negotiate, that's part of the whole principle of what Islam is you don't negotiate with the infidels. Well, when you, if the Pope's responsibility, I think, is twofold. Number one, and this is what we explain in the book, is that he should be telling the truth about what Islam is because he has the responsibility. We as Catholics have the right to the truth. But also he should be working and try to make peace with them as much as they can, dialogue as much as we can, and so on, because that's what we do. We talk to people. We love people. We try to explain. But don't be naive.
888-318-7884, the number. We're talking with Steve Ray about the papacy. If you have questions about the papacy, I have not too many calls from non-Catholics today. If you're a non-Catholic, you're welcome to call. You'd like to know what it is we believe about the Pope, what we believe about his role in salvation history. 888-318-7884 is that number. Catholics, of course, you're also welcome to call. Let's go to Constantine in Chicago, Illinois, listening on Sirius XM satellite radio channel 130 EWTN. Constantine, your question for Steve Ray.
First of all, Constantine, great name. I love it.
I'm an Orthodox person, and there really is only one, Catholic Apostolic Church. Of course, we believe they're at the current crisis, quote unquote, between Constantinople and Ukraine shows, and according to Orthodox tradition, that there is no single human head of the church. The way the church was organized, it was originally the provinces of the Roman Empire, Rome being first in honor, not authority, because it
now,
was
Catholic. Wait a minute. I wrote a book called Upon This Rock, and I took all of your Orthodox theologians, and I dealt with these issues very completely. That is just not correct. The early church accepted the primacy of Rome, not only in as a first among equals, but in jurisdiction. And when two-thirds of the bishops of the Eastern Church were in heresy, who did they go to straighten it out? Two-thirds of the history of the Eastern Church is there in Arian heresies, all kinds of heresies. They came to Rome not only to find the truth of the teaching, but also jurisdictional to appoint the proper bishops in their diocese. So don't come on and just tell me that we're all wrong and that all the churches are equal in your estimation, because it's just not correct.
Can I speak, sir? I'm not here to argue with anybody or say you're wrong. I'm saying
no, you came on to tell me you're wrong just by the way you approached it.
I apologize. I didn't mean to sound nasty. I'm saying it's insulting. We're talking, you're not a single church. Here's the thing is, we view Rome as primus inter pares in terms of honor because of the position of Rome historically. Now, if Christ gave the keys to Peter, and it's the successor of Peter who is due the authority over the entire church, then why isn't the Bishop of Antioch the leader of the church? Because Peter was the first bishop of Antioch several years before he became the Bishop of Rome.
Fair enough.
He was also the first bishop of Jerusalem, the first bishop of Antioch, and he and Paul went to Rome, and the early Christians said that the Church of Rome, which had primacy all over all others, you read the writings of Ignatius of Antioch, that Peter and Paul chose Rome to be the head of the church, and Peter then established that as the primary church of the empire. That's a no-brainer.
This argument, I won't call it an argument, but this disagreement is at least 1,000 years old. So we'll leave it
at
there.
Least. Yeah, it is.
We'll leave it there, Constantine. Thank you very, very much for your call. We always welcome calls from all. You don't have to agree with us to give us a call. The number 888-318-7884. Oh, I was just about to go to more calls, and Nick says, Si, you got to take a break. It's 20 Answers Challenge time. If you want to get all 32 20 Answers books at 60% off and free shipping, just go to shop.catholic.com right now, and you get all 32 books, 60% off and free shipping.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Now there's a fast and easy way to get in touch with EWTN, the EWTN Everything Number. Call 1-800-447-EWTN to get the latest information on programming, special events, pilgrimages, and more. Our EWTN Family Viewer Services representatives are ready to help you with whatever your needs may be. The EWTN Everything Number, 1-800-447-EWTN. EWTN.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking about the papacy with the man who wrote the book, The Papacy, out now from Ignatius Press. And we go now to Eric in McRae, Georgia, listening to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 130. Eric, your question for Steve Ray.
Yes, how you doing? I'm a newly baptized Catholic, and I was doing some research on, well, I was just looking on YouTube, looking at Catholic Answers Live broadcast on YouTube, watching the videos, and I came across this one guy who was talking, was basically claiming that Pope Francis is an anti-pope, and I'm thinking, what is an anti-pope? Is it like the Antichrist or something? I've never heard of an anti-pope.
I'll explain to you. In history, there were times where there were three men claiming to be popes at one time. So in other words, there's the pope, and then somebody else says, well, I'm the pope. This guy's not good, and I'm the pope, or you have two or three at one time. It would be like during the Confederate War, to some degree, that there were two presidents, one of the South and one of the North, but there's still one country, but, you know, all of a sudden there's claiming to be two. And so anti-pope was the one who was not really the pope. Even during those times, there was one legitimate pope, but sometimes it was confusing to people who was it. So an anti-pope is someone who claims to be a pope or takes the office, contrary to there being a real pope, and therefore he is an anti-pope. He is against the real pope. So what they're meaning by Pope Francis, and I don't buy into this conspiracy theory kind of a thing. I've mentioned that earlier. Is they're saying that because Benedict is still alive, he is the pope, and Pope Francis took his place, so he's the anti. You have two popes alive, one is real and one's not, and they're saying that Pope Francis is the Antichrist, or the not pope, or the anti-pope, and Pope Francis is the real one. That is where that discussion you're hearing is probably coming from.
Okay, because I was a little concerned that you said someone on Catholic Answers Live said that Francis is the anti-pope. I can assure you.
No, I'm sure that, it would have been somebody who was challenging or questioning somebody.
Must have been a caller, right?
Catholic Answers Live, I know you guys way too well. Nobody on your show is going to say that Pope Francis is the Antichrist, the anti-pope, or they won't be on the show again.
Eric, how's that answer for you?
Well, that answer's, it wasn't anyone on Catholic Answers Live, it's just a video I saw, but I did see some priest, I don't know if he's a real priest or a fake priest, but an anti-priest maybe, he's promoting his book about the changes in the Eucharist at Vatican II, and basically claiming that Pope Francis is leading the church astray. And he claims to be a father, and I forgot the name of his book, but he has a book out.
There's a lot of people out there fomenting confusion and anger and all this about that. I would not pay a whole lot of attention to a lot. What happens is a whole group of people called Sedevacantists and radical traditionalists who believe that Vatican II was an illegitimate council, and that any pope after that is not a legitimate pope, that we have not had a pope since Vatican II, and Vatican II is illegitimate. These people don't pay any attention to them. They have no joy, and that's all they can talk about. And I have no regard for those folks whatsoever.
We are delighted that you've been baptized into the Catholic Church,
yes.
Eric.
Welcome home.
Amen, brother. Will you give us a call again when you got more questions?
Well, I do have
welcome home.
Question.
We're glad to have you.
I'm glad to be here. I just don't want to go off topic because I know they have a topic. But I know it's said that Catholics can't become Freemasons, but I'm a Freemason, and I was baptized a Catholic. And actually, I just got initiated into Knights of Columbus last week, and when I found out that Freemasonry was incompatible with my new faith, you know, I can't just drop Freemasonry like cold turkey. My dues card are paid up to 2000 to the end of this year, so I'm not sure what I need to do. I've already told my Masonic brethren that I'm going to choose the church and the Knights of Columbus over their fraternity.
Well, you've done what you need to do, Eric.
And you made the right choice, too. What I would do is there's some good writings. I don't have them off the tip of my tongue, but I'm sure if you called Catholic Answers, they'd help you. But there's good material on that so that you'll know why you made that decision and you'll feel very comfortable with it. But you made the right decision, and we're glad you're home with us, and welcome home. We need good guys like you.
And Tuesdays and Thursdays are open forum days, Eric, so if you ever got a question you feel like, that's not on the topic, just call on a Tuesday or Thursday. The topic is whatever you got on your mind. Thanks so much for the call. I want to move on now to Colette in Oklahoma City, listening on 97.3 FM. Colette, your question on the papacy for Steve Ray.
Hi. My question is, with the popes and the bishops and stuff, did they ever marry originally and have spouses and stuff? I read somewhere that happened, and then now, I mean, if they're celibate, is there any way that they would come back to being able to be married with all the problems with
Very good question. You know, that is such a good question that should be a whole radio show dedicated to that one. But let me just very briefly say that we know that Peter was married because he healed his mother-in-law from a fever. I think it was a fever. And so we know that, and there's also in the early tradition that he had a daughter, and Paul, when he argues, he's made the argument, don't the other apostles have the right to take a believing wife with them when they travel? So it seems that the early apostles had wives and families, and the early church did not have the strict rule of celibacy in regard to marriage or not marriage. They always had the regard to celibacy and the charge being sexually, if you're married, monogamously, that in that sense. But the scriptures laid the foundation for a celibate single priesthood, because Paul says, I wish all men were like me, because if you are not married, you can dedicate your whole life to Christ, whereas the married man has to divide his life between Christ and taking care of his family, which is also following Christ, of course. And Jesus said there are some that are eunuchs by birth, some that are eunuchs by men. In other words, they're castrated. That's what the kings used to do, is they used to castrate men so they would take care of their harems and they didn't have to worry about the men messing with the girls in the harem. So there were some that were eunuchs by birth, some were eunuchs by men, and others are eunuchs by choice to follow the kingdom of God. The disciples said, well, that's a hard thing. And Jesus said, some have a gift in one way and others have a gift in others. In other words, there's some that have the gift to be single to serve in the kingdom of God. So the early church didn't make it a dogma. In other words, it can never change, but they made it a discipline that men who are in the priesthood should be single so that they can serve with undevoted attention to the church. And they have a bride. The bride is the church, and they're, in a sense, espoused to that bride, the church, so they can help take care of her. They're like the husband. So there were in the early church married priests and bishops and so on, but very quickly the practice came where they had to be celibate in order to serve the church. Now, that is not a dogma. It could change. And in the Eastern churches, for example, the Eastern Catholic churches, there are married priests. And even sometimes I know priests in the Catholic Church who were maybe Anglican and married, and they converted, and the church said, you have a gift of priesthood, so you can be, and they have children and grandchildren. I remember the time when a priest I met him for the first time. He said, hello, and these are my grandchildren. And I'm thinking, wait, somehow this is a cognitive disorientation here. He explained, well, I used to be Anglican. I was a priest, and I came into the church, and the church gave me the dispensation to have a wife, my family, and to still be a priest. So that is not set in cement. It could change, but I don't think it's likely, and I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
They would change because of all the molestation and the different things that have happened. If someone has a gift for that, then yes, they should be single and serve God. And I understand that, you know, they would have their whole focus be on that, but
it should be. And there are some that sneak in who don't want to follow those rules and maybe don't have that calling, but they still get ordained anyway. and they don't live that celibate lifestyle. But it's not celibacy that causes the problem. It's an innate problem already, because the problem is just as big or bigger among married clergy in the Protestant churches.
Colette, thank you very, very much for your call. We go now to Robbie in Boise, Idaho. Robbie, your question for Steve Ray.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about Catholics calling the Pope Holy Father. It was a question that my dad had asked me, and I didn't know how to respond.
Good question.
The Bible says, you know, not to call any man father, but...
Well, let me jump right in. The Bible, Jesus is talking about the Pharisees. He says, call no man your father. You have one father in heaven. That's just called rabbinic hyperbole, where rabbis would exaggerate in one way to make a point against the Pharisees. Because Paul says to Timothy, I am your father in the faith. And if I can't call any man father, what am I going to call the husband of my mom? What am I going to call the guy that gave me birth? I can't call him father. What am I going to call him? So if we take Jesus' words to be absolute, that means that no longer can I call my dad father. And it also means that Jesus said two things, call no man your father, call no man your teacher. So now what am I going to call the guy who taught me algebra? I can't call him teacher anymore if I'm going to take Jesus' words to be absolutely locking me in. So what? But when we say they're their father, we're referring to their spiritual fatherhood. They're there, like Paul said, I brought you, Timothy, into the faith, therefore I am your father. You may have many teachers, but you only have one father. Even Jesus and Stephen in the Bible refer to Father Abraham. How can Jesus refer to Father Abraham if you're not supposed to call anybody father? So let's deal with that alone. Why call the Pope Holy Father? I can accept the fact that he's father, but wait a minute, holy, is the Pope sinless? This is what people think. He can't be holy because he's sinful just like everybody else. But the word holy has two definitions. One definition is sinless, but the other definition of holy means sanctified or set apart for a sacred purpose. So the Pope, or any of us, you also can be holy. Not that you're sinless right now, but you are still holy. You're still a saint with a small s, because you are set apart and sanctified and called to be a child of God, a special sacred task. So it would be proper then to call the Pope Holy Father if we understand what both of those words mean.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome. Thank you. God bless.
Robbie, thank you very, very much. That's an interesting point to leave it or to come to after this conversation about the papacy and the job description of the Pope, all rooted in your brand new book, The Papacy, from Ignatius Press, that I said some of these men don't seem to be worthy of it. I suppose there's a way in which no one is worthy of the title Holy Father.
Absolutely.
That it refers.
Certainly not.
But it does refer to something real, though.
It does. My father was a father. He didn't always do everything right. In many ways, if you held him up to an ideal standard, he wasn't, although I really think my dad is the best dad in the world. But there are many fathers who abuse their children or who don't take care of them. They abandon them, and they're still called father. They don't deserve that title, but they still are biologically a father. Like you said, it's the real thing. So we can be fathers, but we don't deserve it. I am a father by God's grace. I have 4 children and 16 grandchildren, and I'm just the most blessed man in the world. But I'm only in that position because of God's grace that I'm a father. And to be called holy, I know I'm a sinner. That's why I go to confession every month. We always have done that as a family. We go to confession every month. Our kids went, now it's just my wife and I. But I go there because I know I'm a sinner, but at the same time, I'm called by God to a sacred task to be his son and to serve him with my whole heart and life, and therefore I'm holy in the sense of being set apart and sanctified for him. But I'm also working to get to be a saint with a capital S, holy with a capital H, which means that I am sinless. And maybe that probably won't happen until I get to heaven, but I'm still working on it.
Closer every day, though, I hope.
I hope so, too. My wife says we're doing pretty good, but I'll tell you what, though, Si, I know we're short of time, but I have been able to overcome sins in my life since being a Catholic that I could have never overcome or dreamed of it as an evangelical.
I know exactly what you're talking about. There is power in them sacraments.
There is.
People can get a copy of the new book, The Papacy, What the Pope Does and Why It Matters from Ignatius Press, just by going to Ignatius.com, or you can visit Steve Ray.
Or come to my site.
Yeah, go to his own site, Catholic.
If you come to my site, I'll also give you Crossing the Tiber in my talk on angels. You'll get them all for just $20. CatholicConvert.com.
I feel like you had that planned out.
I did.
CatholicConvert.com. Thanks very much, Steve Ray. Really appreciate
it. Thank you, Si.
Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum. If you've got a question about the Catholic faith, we'll do our very best to give you an answer, whether you are Catholic or not. See you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.